Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
You know, speaking of best parts of our culture, now that things are kind of opening up, I really kind of feel this need to go back to the like Museum of Fine Arts or something, find a way for us to do this.
Oh, yes.
We've talked about this over and over again, but my friend David Franks was talking about how he went to the Monet exhibit at the MFA this past week and how awesome it is and see the breadth of Monet's work and all that stuff.
It's just the logistics of five kids there is a lot different than a single guy.
Yes. Well, he's got kids, but I'm not sure if they went with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know. It's just longing for things to get better.
Yeah, it's the, if the cafeteria was open.
That's the key. How do we feed them? Feed the troops. Yeah. So, I want to start this week with some listener feedback. We got some email. Okay. Eric sent in an email, and here's part of what he said. He said, I've been a scout leader for almost 20 years, and I have a pick of the week for winter camping, because we talked about winter camping last
week. Right.
The temperature rating on the sleeping bags are for what temp the bag will keep you alive, not comfortable. And I did kind of know that. You need to be 20 degrees below the rating to be comfortable. So I think what he means is some people need 30 degrees lower. So what he means is if it's 30 degrees out, you need a 0 degree bag. Which is, I think, what I was saying last week, but I might have misspoken. But yeah. If it's 30 degrees out, you need a 0 degree bag. If it's 20 degrees out, you need at least a 0 degree bag. You might even need lower, or you need additional stuff to keep you warm. So he says, look up the military sleep system. All the parts will keep you alive at below 40 below. You should be able to get a used set for about $150. I know, expensive, but well worth it. Your scouts would appreciate it too. That's the first part of what he said. And the military sleep system is apparently the sleeping bag system that they issue in the military, like in the Army and the Marines.
Okay.
So I'm going to guess my nephew, John Paul, probably has a set now for him. He's an officer in the Army now. I did look it up and I didn't see any used ones. I couldn't find any used ones, but I did see them. They're about $200 or so, but none of them were in stock. So that's kind of interesting. Military surplus isn't what it used to be. Used to go to an Army Navy store. Well, that's because when they had all the World War II Korean War stuff when I was a kid was in the stores. There's not as much of that anymore. Anyway, he also says, and you got this lecture already, which I did, change into fresh, dry clothes before you get into your bag. One other thing you can do is to throw a couple of hand warmers into your bag with you next to your feet.
Which is one of the things I suggested after you came back. I said, you know, hand warmers would have been a really nice thing to have in your bag with you as you were trying to fall asleep. Which is what I do in the winter, even at home in our bed. I have a little foot warmer that mine's microwavable that I put next to my feet to keep. Because if I try to fall asleep with cold feet, I just will toss and turn and I can't fall asleep. But just warming up my feet is all it takes.
You know, and as I found, having cold feet, you can give me leg cramps too. So I have something I need to, I've been wearing more and more socks at night.
And you can get those little chemical packets that like stay warm for quite some time.
I'm going to get some of those for the camping pack and keep them in there so I can always have them. There are reusable ones too. I watched the Technology Connections YouTube channel, which is awesome. He explains mechanical engineering, consumer technology, all kinds of technology like that in everyday terms. So, you know, how does a dehumidifier work? What makes a good dehumidifier? You know, that sort of thing. So we had hand warmer packets, reusable ones, cool. And how they work.
I had never heard of reusable ones, so that's a new one on me.
Yeah, it's fascinating how that works. The chemistry involved is kind of wild. But
they heat themselves, like they don't.
Yes, they heat themselves through a chemical reaction. And a little bit of a you press a disc inside, which causes a chain reaction.
Uh-huh.
And then to reset them, essentially, you have to put them in water that's hotter. I think it was hot water, so that it reabsorbs the energy. So it creates potential energy. That's what it is.
Oh, potential energy. That makes sense.
Yeah. So it was kind of fascinating. You have to check it out. So hand warmers in the bag next to your feet.
Yes.
And he says, one last tip, as soon as you realize you got to pee, get up and go right then. It's not a thing to get better with time. Hey, look, I am 50 plus years old. I know this already. You'll never get back to sleep until you do. I know. I mean, yeah. That's the worst thing is when you're out camping, it's cold. You just climb into your bag and you're like, I'm going to have to walk all the way to the bathroom. That's if you're in a place that has a bathroom. It's like, just get up. It's not going to get better. You're going to go now or go later, but you get up and go. So, Eric, thank you very much. Those are good tips. Good information. I will keep an eye out. I still might get the 0 degree bag that I was looking at, but I'll keep an eye out. See if I can see the military sleep system. Cause it's nice because it's one system. It's like three different bags that will take you through all the different heat variations from winter to summer.
So it's like different bags?
It's layers.
Layer that you can like zip and unzip?
You put them together. I'm not exactly sure how they go together, but like one goes inside, they cocoon together. So one goes inside and then one of them goes inside and another goes inside.
I see. So well, that's kind of what I mean by yeah, zip and they unzip. Like not necessarily literally zip.
They work together progressively.
Interesting.
So yeah, so that was good. All right. So let's talk about what's been going on. One big thing that happened this week is we scheduled our vaccinations, which 2021.
Yeah.
Can you imagine talking about this 5 years ago?
My Facebook memories for this week, though, remind me that it was just a week ago this week that the Archdiocese of Boston, like the governor closed everything down. The Archdiocese of Boston canceled masses, which didn't reopen until the summer. So it's like if you had told me last spring in March at this time that in a year from now, you're going to be getting a vaccine for this new virus, I would have thought that was pretty crazy.
It is amazing that they developed a vaccine under a year.
Modern medicine is, I mean, really, it's science. Amazing. Science is awesome.
It is incredible, and especially the science that goes into this particular kind
of the mRNA
vaccines.
So cool.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. So that's amazing. And I remember like thinking back when they were talking about it could be a year to 18 months to getting a working vaccine, which it was less, which was nice.
Right.
But thinking, we're going to have to do this for a year? I don't know that I can stand this for a year, which we have, many of us have, and we live in a place that... The big thing, as we've said before, the big difference in how you approach everything that's going on really is very specific to where you live.
Right.
If you live in Florida or Texas or places like that, your experience, your attitude toward lockdown and all the other stuff is going to be vastly different from somebody who lives where your experience will be vastly different from somebody who lives where it's been especially rigorous, like in Massachusetts or New York City or California. I mean, California is even more than what we've had.
Right.
You know, at a higher level. So it's hard to like sometimes I get into these discussions.
Apples and oranges.
Yeah. And we're like, oh, you know, you're so wimpy. It's not that bad. And other people are like, no, your experience is very different from my experience. We've had a very different situation. And so that's one thing I wanted to point out. But yeah, it is amazing. In under a year, we have a vaccine, and this coming week, we're going to get the first shot, and we're going to be able to not necessarily go back to living life as normal right away, but I'm going to feel a lot more comfortable hanging out with people with, you know,
right.
Mask or no mask. You know, I'm going to feel comfortable going places and doing things. And, you know, the kids still don't have vaccines, and that's going to be a while before they can get them. But it's kind of amazing. I'm looking forward to the spring. I'm looking forward to Easter, all these things. So that was big this week. It's kind of amazing, too, because Massachusetts has been so slammed, their vaccination website. People have been talking about these horror stories about trying to get the shot, trying to get scheduled for a shot. And they just opened like this pre-registration site now on last Friday. And it was so weird. It was like you pre-register to get a chance to register for an appointment. But though that's just for the mass vaccination sites. They have in these big vaccination sites around the state. But there are also vaccination clinics going on in individual towns. And so our town posted on there, like the town health agent posted on the Facebook page for the Facebook group for the town that there's these clinics and go to this site to sign up. And I did. And I'm like, that seems to be, I have an appointment. Like, that was kind of fascinating.
Right.
And then I came and got you. I was like, sign up for your appointment.
Right. They had just opened up and there are lots of appointments actually for next week. So.
Right.
So I don't know how fast they went.
Right.
They might've gone really fast.
Well, the Wednesday filled up quick. So we were on the second day. The second day was Thursday, but they've been doing these clinics too, you know, every once in a while. So I'm thrilled. I am thrilled to be able to go get my first shot, and we're getting the good one, not the evil one. The morally, the one that has more material cooperation with evil than the other two. So that I'm happy with that. So the other thing this week is it's exam week for Bella.
It was exam week this past week.
Yes, that's right. I'm sorry.
Yes. So her school year is divided up into three terms. So we just finished her second term and we had exams.
This is homeschooling. You've determined that this is how
right.
It works.
Right. Well, the curriculum we're following, which is Mater Amabilis, uses a three-term system, and it's very nice because the main classes have pre-written exams, so I don't have to rack my brain to come up with questions.
Mm.
If I had to rack my brain, I might skip exams because, frankly, that would just be another thing for me to do. She had, it was sort of the short essay, which for her, you could tell which ones that she really liked and which ones she really didn't, because the essays ranged from about three or four sentences to a page. So in each of the subjects, religion, history, English, and geography, she had, you know, like six essay questions and she could pick three or four of them, I think. No, four of them to do.
Okay.
So not too bad. And, of course, she still had her regular biology this week. Her lab was dissecting clams.
Was that this week?
Yeah, that was this past week.
Oh, right. Yes.
Which was Thursday at lunchtime is unfortunately her lab time. And we only really have the dining room table as space for her to do her lab.
So everybody comes to the dining room to eat their lunch and she's got her dissection going on. And we're like, hey, look at the weather. It's nice out. Let's go eat outside.
Fortunately, it was nice weather. I'm not sure what we would have done if it had been bad weather. Maybe I would have just let everybody put down a picnic blanket in the living room or something.
Yeah, I would have eaten at my desk in the office. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like super gross.
You couldn't smell it like 10 feet away. But it's sitting at the same table with food.
It was a big quahog, too. I mean, this was a big honking clam, which, I mean, from a distance, it looked good. I'm like, you throw a little butter on that. And no, not that one. But it did make me kind of want to go out to the lobster fountain and buy some quahogs.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure Bella would have wanted to have any after that afternoon, though.
She did have fish sticks for lunch, though.
Well, that's true. That's true. A little different, but yeah.
So that was exciting. It's different having a high schooler. We're a lot more formal.
Formal about things, yeah.
About things like exams. My kids have never really done exams as part of our normal homeschooling. But
there's a bit of a learning curve just on the what does it mean to take an exam? To, like, do an essay question.
Right. And I actually kind of had some miscommunication with her on Monday, and which we didn't realize until Monday evening. So she kind of didn't answer all the questions because she thought they were all the questions for the week somehow. I don't think she really thought that through. Anyway,
yeah,
there was miscommunication problems, but we're getting there.
Good, good. And as far as that the things go, I mean, that's about it for the week. I mean, we had, you know, normal house stuff around the house, family things happening, but nothing too Nothing too interesting. Nothing you want to hear about.
Orthodontist appointments and van appointments recalls. And
getting the van into a recall. Yeah. You don't want to hear about that. But that's. And then planning for what we're going to do with our Biden bucks from the stimulus check windfall.
Yeah.
Nothing exciting. Well, there's some fun stuff. Like we actually need to replace our couch because it is destroyed.
Our couch is almost 12 years old.
Yes. 5 kids.
Right now, basically there's a board.
There's a piece of plywood
underneath the cushions, which is basically keeping you from falling onto the floor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much. So we desperately need a new couch.
It's past time.
And then pay off the rest of the loan on the van and stuff, whatever. Yeah. So nothing exciting there. But, for us, it's exciting. So, I don't know if you can hear that. The wind is blowing so hard tonight. It's vibrating something outside.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that today is. So you probably didn't hear that over on the mic. It's probably the filter has got it. But it kind of threw me off for a second. So let's talk about food stuff. So this week I saw an article.
Okay.
On America's Test Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Japanese mayo hack that makes cheap ramen taste luxurious.
Luxurious. That's a big promise.
It's a big promise. So because I like ramen, instant ramen. I don't usually eat the cheap 50¢ a pack or 30¢ a pack. I get the nicer ones, the nicer brand, which is better. And I sometimes doll it up a little bit with stuff. I've talked about that before on the show. But I like the QP mayonnaise. So Japanese mayonnaise is different. The QP brand, which is kind of funny because it's actually mayonnaise came to Japan with American soldiers. And like a lot of things, the Japanese took it and then they ran with it and made it more Japanese. And so what makes QP mayonnaise different is it has, get rid of the pop-up on the page so I can see what the... So the QP mayonnaise has rice vinegar in it and...
Instead of
Well, it has regular... Well, so mayonnaise is just oil and egg, right?
It doesn't usually have vinegar?
Well, maybe some of them do, but the QP mayonnaise has rice vinegar and added MSG. That's what it is. So it has a distinct flavor. It's different from American mayonnaise. And you'll find it a lot of times in certain sushis, like spicy tuna and that sort of stuff. It's got QP mayonnaise mixed with sriracha a lot of times. So it's really good. And I use it on rice bowls and stuff like that. So here's the hack. You take the pack. Okay.
Of ramen.
The package. In a bowl, you put a big dollop of mayonnaise, like a tablespoon. You grate a clove of garlic and you drop in a raw egg. Okay.
And then into a bowl.
Into a bowl. And then you add the spice packets from the ramen. Okay. Into the bowl. And you whisk it together. Okay. So that's in the bowl. Then you cook the noodles as usual, according to the directions. You boil them, And when they're done, you pour them over what's in the bowl. You just put it in the bowl and you stir it up. And then it says you're going to get this silky, luxurious broth that tastes expensive, tastes real, very good. I'm like, okay, I'll try it. And I've tried it twice. I might be doing something wrong because I'm cooking the noodles in the microwave. Like I put it in a bowl with hot water.
It's maybe not getting quite as hot as actually boiling.
Well, what's happening is the mayonnaise is breaking. You know how it breaks, it gets kind of curdled. Mm-hmm. And so it's breaking when I'm putting the broth and noodles in, the water and noodles in. So I don't know if it's not boiling, if I should boil it on the stove. I mean, I'll try it another time and I'll boil it on the stove, do it the hard way and the long way and see if that makes a difference. But I've been putting egg in my ramen for a while, so it's not especially amazing. Now, maybe if I were using the cheap 30-cent ramen package, it would be a bigger difference.
But isn't the one in the picture the fancy one?
No, that's the cheap. Well, I don't know. It might be, but it looks, it's probably the cheap stuff. They talk about the cheap stuff, but I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
I'll try it again, but I was not like super blown away. But it's like a lot of these like viral food things, like the feta and tomato pasta bake hack. You've seen that one yet?
No.
You take a bunch of tomatoes and basil or something, I don't know, on a sheet tray. You plop a block of feta in the middle, you bake it, and then you mix it all around and pour it over pasta. And it's this amazing thing. And so many people are trying it that there's actually a shortage of feta in the marketplace.
Really?
Which is annoying for people like me who enjoy feta on a regular basis on their salads and things.
That kind of sounds like a really bad version of the shrimp dish that I used to make when I was in high school.
Shrimp and feta?
Yeah, my high school had sort of an international food day where everyone was assigned a country and like we had to bring a recipe from that country, and mine was Greece. And my mom had a Greek cookbook. It was okay. Like a Time Life Countries of the World cookbook series. And so I ended up with this shrimp. It was like a tomato cooked in like a tomato sauce. So it was almost like a soup. Like it was very, very brothy, but you're supposed to serve it over, I don't know, rice or pasta or with crusty bread to soak up the juices. I just remember it was like very tomato-y broth and it had the shrimp in it. And then you crumbled feta on top. And that's what made it Greek. I mean, other than that, it wasn't especially like. And I made it all the time. That became my signature dish that I made like once a month when I was in high school and even into college. And then at some point, I had it so many times that I was kind of tired of it. I haven't actually made it since.
Huh.
Like, I haven't made it since we've been married. But I keep thinking, maybe I should try to find it again.
That would be interesting. Well, the baked feta one is, like, you take a bunch of cherry tomatoes, put them in a baking dish or on a sheet pan or whatever, combine it with olive oil, garlic, oregano, basil, salt, black pepper, drop a block of feta in the middle of it, bake in the oven for 30 to 45 minutes, and then you mix it. Once it's done, you mash it all together, and once the tomatoes have burst, and then you mash it all together and pour it over the pasta that you've made.
Yeah,
I mean, okay. I'm not sure it's going to be all that awesome, but it's like a lot of these TikTok food trends. There's a lot of these like gimmicky like things.
They look pretty when you have a short video of them.
Right, right.
That's really the main thing, is that it looks.
It looks cool. Accessible, like, oh, I could do that, but also it looks good, looks yummy, and that's, yeah. One of the things that drives me crazy with, like, I see a lot of these, I don't use TikTok, I use the Instagram Reels, which is, like, Instagram's version of TikTok. I see a lot of the barbecue ones, and they have this habit of, like, I've just cooked this meat, look how juicy it is, and squeezing the meat so the juice runs out, like, you're ruining it. Stop squeezing it. Why do you feel the need to squeeze it? Don't squeeze it. Just yummy. See how yummy this is? I can see how yummy it is. Jesse, crazy. There's these, everyone has like, somebody did it and then everybody copies it. And everybody like,
That becomes the thing.
Right. If you're going to make this kind of video, you have to do this particular thing. Like, it's really annoying. Anyway.
Okay.
So.
Tell me how you really feel.
That's how I really feel. So another thing, a food-related thing, was I got an email today from my website. I talked about that making Sunday gravy a couple months ago, and I kind of started getting into it, and I posted the recipe on my blog, and I got an email today from someone who read it, and they're like, this is great, but I need help making just a simple pasta sauce. I've been making pasta sauce for years, and it always comes out either like too thin, too bland, too sweet, too tart. Can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. Can you give me your recipe for just a simple pasta sauce? I'm like, okay, I can do that. So I wrote it up, and I'll put a link in the show notes to my weeknight pasta sauce recipe. And it's not important, as I've said before, the exact amounts of things. It's the principles of things and sort of a few of the tricks. One of the tricks is to use tomato paste.
Yes.
To caramelize the tomato paste in the pan, let it get dark and brown. And that really brings out a lot of that long cooking flavor, that long cooked flavor, that long simmer. You can do that really quick just with that fried up tomato paste. a couple other tricks you can use to really jazz it up. If you add some Kalamata olives and some of the olive oil, the olive brine.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
That adds a really nice taste. You can add a dash of Worcestershire, red wine.
Worcestershire? I've never done that one.
Just a dash of Worcestershire. It's that MSG, bam, right in your mouth.
I have done fish sauce, though, because Sicilian pastas sometimes use like anchovies or other small fish, like chopped up in them.
Yep.
And I wanted that fishy flavor, but not to have to mess with the anchovies. So like a dash of fish sauce.
I need to remember to put that back in my blog post because I totally forgot about that.
I also love my personal flavors that I love that aren't necessarily standard are red pepper flakes.
That actually is standard.
Is it?
Yes. Well, in Sicilian versions.
Yeah. Right. Red pepper flakes, fennel and anise.
Yep.
I love adding fennel and anise and red pepper flakes to the oil when it's hot before you add in your onions and garlic. And I think that just adds a phenomenal flavor.
Yeah. Also, you could add. So for the spices that I use, let me see if I can find it here quick. I use oregano, basil, thyme. You can use rosemary.
See, I don't use thyme and rosemary. I just do oregano and basil.
I think thyme is a really good addition. But I was going to say, make sure you use some wine, like red wine.
Yes. White wine.
You can use white wine. You can use vodka even, vodka sauce. Right.
Alcohol brings out those flavor compounds in the tomatoes.
Right. Tomatoes have certain alcohol-soluble flavors. So you want to really get, if you want to really get the whole tomato taste, it's got to have some alcohol in there to pull it out.
And really, you can't put too much red wine in your pasta sauce.
Well, you could put too much, but yes.
It would be really hard to.
Yeah. Another trick I mentioned before is grating a carrot into it. That kind of, the sweetness cuts the...
I'm not as big a fan of that, honestly. Yeah.
Well, it works better on the longer simmer because it has time to break the carrot down. If you don't want to do the carrot, you can add a spoonful of sugar.
That's usually what I do.
That works too.
Did you ever put bell pepper in your pasta sauce?
I did say in the blog post that you can add vegetables like bell pepper, diced carrots instead of grated, sun-dried tomatoes, mushrooms. I would saute the mushrooms with the onions.
Yeah. You want to cook them. You don't just want to plop them into the sauce. You want to like saute them and get some like color on them.
Right. What else? Just all those things. And the key is it's adaptable and try new things and throw something else in. But you're building flavors. That's the key, is you're adding in and you're building layers of flavor. I sometimes will use cans of fire roasted tomatoes. That's good. But I usually mostly use just the crushed tomatoes. I prefer the crushed over the diced. I know you like to use a mix of diced and crushed.
Sometimes.
But I kind of prefer the even texture of the crushed just because that's what I'm used to.
I think
it coats the pasta better, too.
I kind of like chunkies. With like chunks of tomato in my pasta.
I know. But I just like the way it coats the pasta better. But that's my thing. Let's see.
We obviously don't cook the same pasta sauce. Like, so there is sort of differences in.
Yeah.
When I cook versus you cook.
But it works.
Yeah.
So I'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can check it out. Or you go to my website, betnet.com. The other thing I wanted to mention was we were talking about this at dinner. We had chicken tortilla soup for dinner, which was, we're kind of, it's at 4 o'clock. What are we having for dinner tonight? What do you think?
We had leftover chicken from the other night.
We had leftover chicken. And we're saying how it's always great to have a repertoire of recipes that use up leftovers. Again, another thing we probably mentioned before, but recipes that use that are particularly good at using up leftovers and soups. Soups, stews, curries are great at using up leftovers. So, for example, if we had, corn and peas, leftover corn and peas from a dinner, that could go into the tortilla soup. We made chicken thighs last night. We had chicken thighs and we had some leftover. So, shred it up, throw that in the soup. When you have tortilla chips and you have the end of the bag with all the crumbles, that's great for a garnish for the tortilla soup.
Well, that's what makes the tortilla soup.
Right. That's the tortilla part of the tortilla soup. But you don't have to use, open up a fresh bag of tortilla chips. I mean, you can if that's what you have. But if you have this, the crumbs at the bottom of the bag, you just, you save them up for tortillas.
Yeah, I just, when we get to the bottom of a tortilla chip bag, I combine them, like, so I will have like 5 or 6 bags worth of like leftover crumbs. And you can even use like Doritos or Fritos if that's what you got.
Doritos might be actually pretty good.
Especially the spicy ones.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, like
Cheetos.
I don't use fresh tortillas unless
that's all we have.
Unless that's all we got.
Which is kind of funny. But yeah. Yeah, it's great to have, like, when you have a curry and you got broccoli or leftover cauliflower, throw it in.
Cauliflower in curry is one of my favorite things.
Right. In fact, if you want it, you could use the cauliflower as a thickener. Like, you can grind it up, you know, with a blender. Or potatoes. Like, if you have, like, leftover roast potatoes, throw those in your curry. Or in a soup. I wouldn't do it in a tortilla soup, but if you have a chicken soup or...
Oh, I would totally throw leftover potatoes in tortilla soup.
Well, we had leftover potatoes. You could have thrown them.
I forgot.
Yeah. So...
But tortilla soup always makes me think of my Aunt Carol and Uncle Paul. Because the first time I ever had it was when we went to dinner at their house one time. And I'd never heard of it. And I was a little bit weirded out the first time by, like, putting tortilla chips in the soup bowl and then pouring soup on top. That seemed like a very strange thing to do to me. But it was really good. And so after that, I added it to my list of things that I wanted to try to cook. But I think it was several years after that before I actually cooked it on my own. But I still kind of see my Aunt Carol and hear my Uncle Paul when I make it. So it's kind of nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Especially because my Uncle Paul died a couple years ago. And so I miss him. And it's a nice little memory.
Nice. So I'm trying to think of if we have other recipes that we do that really stop.
Well, the other thing what was made us think about it was that I made banana muffins this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday. Banana muffins, great way to use up your smushy bananas that nobody wants to eat.
We should make them more often because I've been throwing away a lot of bananas.
I know. Well, I used to stick them in the freezer.
Yeah.
And I kind of stopped doing that and I need to get back into the habit of it. I didn't think any of the kids liked banana muffins. And I think that was because Lucy was the primary muffin eater and she does not really particularly like them. But it turns out that they're Sophie's favorite muffin, she told me today.
Oh.
And so I'm like, oh, well.
Plus, banana nut bread is amazing.
Yeah, these are actually were banana. They had some almond flour and I ground up some pecans and put them in, like, not ground, but like
chopped.
Finely chopped. Mm-hmm. So they don't have gigantic chunks because that puts some people off.
Sure. And if you get braces, that would be not fun.
So, yeah, I actually threw chocolate chips in too because
why not?
Chocolate chips are good.
Yes.
They're still not technically dessert,
mm-hmm.
but they kind of feel like a little bit of a treat.
Yes. Little treat in the middle of Lent, which is this week. Someone was saying that this week is the feast day, the feast week of Lent. So we've got Sunday is Laudate Sunday, this past Sunday. And then we have the Ides of March, which is not really a celebration, but then we have...
Well, I suppose we can watch Julius Caesar or something.
We could. Actually, I have to watch Hail Caesar for Secrets of Movies and TV Shows. So I have to actually watch that tomorrow night, which is Monday night, which is the Ides of March. It's a Coen Brothers movie.
Okay.
So I'm going to probably recruit you for that, to watch it. No, you don't have to be on the show.
Okay.
But we got also St. Patrick's Day,
which is also Lucy's baptism day. So right. We always do St. Patrick's Day big. I mean, he's the patron saint of our diocese, and
Lucy's birthday.
Lucy's big feast, special day.
Baptism day. Yeah. And I've got corned beef defrosting for that. And then on Friday it's St. Joseph's Day, which that's a big Italian day. Zeppoli.
And. He's also Ben's patron saint, too. So.
Yes, Benedict Joseph. It is a Friday. It is a solemnity. So therefore, this is a meat Friday in Lent.
Right. Somehow it feels like it comes up on Fridays an awful lot.
the solemnity?
St. Joseph.
He's got our back.
Right.
He's like, don't worry. He's like the old granddad. Don't worry. I'm sliding you some stuff. Here you go.
I don't even know what to cook for dinner.
For St. Joseph's Day? If the weather's good, I'm putting some steaks on a grill or something.
not going to make some Italian food?
Well, no, you're going to make the Zeppeli, the St. Joseph.
Well, I will do that. Cream puffs.
Cream puffs. Yeah. So we'll have at least
they're real. Cream puffs are actually really easy. I did forget to double check the ingredient list, though. So
we'll have to make sure I get some when we go food shopping.
But choux pastry is actually, it's a little bit time consuming, but it's not technically difficult.
It's not the choux.
Yeah.
Not literally like choux, the thing on your foot.
Well, it's almost as bad because choux in French is actually cabbage. It's cabbage paste, literally translated.
Yeah. Why?
Because when you drop it onto a tray, it kind of looks like little cabbages.
Oh, sure.
When you extrude it, like
yeah, yeah. Sure.
It does.
Those French. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So big feast week, heading into the second half of Lent. So let's talk about books and things.
Okay.
First, I got something like a topic I want to talk about, but I haven't finished reading any books. I haven't watched anything really new. I'm still working on the book I was working on last week. So you finished a book.
I finished Willa Cather's O Pioneers.
O Pioneers. No?
No.
Oh, sorry.
So after I read Death Comes for the Archbishop, I decided to read some more Willa Cather. I happen to have some on my Kindle. And so she wrote three novels, which are all set on the prairies of Nebraska, where she lived when she was a girl and young woman. She wasn't originally from there, but her family moved to Nebraska. And so O Pioneers is a story about a Norwegian family.
You know, you talked about this last week.
Did I?
Yes. You said, no. I'm reading this book, so I'm just giving you the chance to finish up.
Okay, I finished the book. I don't remember talking about it. I don't know. I finished it. It was good. It was kind of sad. And I'm still trying to process exactly, like, what it was about in terms of, like, themes. But I enjoyed it. It was a good read.
Okay.
I liked the, and, you know, it's interesting because even there, you kind of see that there are several Catholic characters, and the Catholic Church actually of the town features prominently in a few scenes. And Willa Cather herself was not Catholic, but I kind of feel like there's a sense in her books of this attraction to the Catholic Church. Like, it's portrayed.
But she talks about it a lot.
Right. It's portrayed in a very favorable way, with the main character in O Pioneers kind of having almost some sort of longing, like those Catholics, they have something.
Hmm.
There's something attractive about their faith, about their culture, that kind of draws the main characters in.
Cool.
Oh yeah.
And you said you also discovered a new podcast.
Yeah, I listened to a few episodes of a new podcast, which I think I might listen to a little bit more. So the podcast is called Last Day, and the first season I was directed specifically by a friend to the second season, so I skipped the first season, which is evidently about addiction and overdose. The second season is about suicide, which does not sound like a terribly winning, exciting topic, but it's really good storytelling for a really difficult subject matter. And it's really about the two hosts, the two main founders of the podcast, are both people who they came together. They met each other because both of their brothers had died of an overdose. And so I think that telling stories about overdose and being a survivor of that in the first season somehow led them to talking about suicide in the second season. Really powerful storytelling, and really sort of diving into the causes. The second episode was about, is suicide contagious? About what are actual interventions and preventatives, and what are not? So I've only listened to three episodes, but it was really good. I can see that it would not be a podcast
Not for everyone.
It would definitely not be a podcast for everyone. Okay. But I have a friend who whose son died by suicide. And so she, as a person who has personally dealt with this, vouched for this podcast as being especially good on the topic.
Okay.
But she's not a fan of most things that have to deal with suicide.
Right. Most don't deal with it well, right, by her standards.
By her standards. And this is a secular podcast, but faith comes up. I mean, it's going to come up in those kinds of stories. So yeah, it's not specifically coming at it from a Catholic angle. It's more like a mental health angle. Anyway.
Okay. So
I also watched, I forgot to tell you this.
Okay.
I watched I watched the new David Copperfield movie.
Oh, right.
Which I thought had some really, I mean, the casting was actually really good. It had Peter Capaldi in it.
Oh.
And Tilda Swinton, several big names. I can't remember all who else. And the acting was good. The storytelling, the costumes and sets were really visually attractive. The color palette was very bright. Lots of pastels and bright colors, which is not what one normally thinks of with Dickens. Usually Dickens movies I think of as being like gray and dark. And this was not. But I really felt like they were pushing we're doing a whimsical take on David Copperfield. Like, it was very heavy on the whimsy.
Mm.
Which,
this seems to be a trend. Like, the Tesla movie that was out that had all the, like, technological anachronisms, like people with iPhones. And then the Dickinson, on Apple TV Plus. All these
reimaginings
weird...
of...
Yeah.
I mean, there were things about it that I really liked. And to an extent, whimsy doesn't bother me. I just felt like it was a little bit thick on the whimsy. And also, David Copperfield is a very big novel. This had a frenetic pace in trying to fit it all in. And I don't know that that was served the novel terribly well. Like, you know... Another Dickens novel that I saw recently was Bleak House, and that adaptation was a miniseries. This felt like it would have been better served with a miniseries. I guess they didn't really want to do that, but it was just like boom, 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 quick, 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 quick. And mm-hmm. I wanted to spend more time with the story.
Okay. So, and you, was that online?
I watched it on, Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay.
It was $5 to rent.
Okay.
Yeah. It was entertaining. It was not bad, but it also wasn't like 4 stars.
Okay.
Maybe 3 stars.
All right. So the thing I wanted to bring up was a conversation we were having the other day, which is the trick of when you're reading when your kids get to that age where they start to want to read the books that you're reading. So I read a lot of books in a bunch of different genres. I read a lot of sci-fi, and the kids are, and some of it's Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek and Star Wars, but the Star Wars ones is the ones the kids want to read. And you've done a lot more of the reading the books to see if it's appropriate for the kids to read than I have.
Right.
And I've kind of run into this where the kids are like, oh, is that a Star Wars book I can read? And some of the ones that I've read a while ago, I'm like, I have no idea. I don't remember. Like, I remember right. the book, but I don't remember if there's stuff in it that you shouldn't read because I'm 50 and I've seen a lot. And some of the stuff I just skim over because I don't even think about it because I just ignore it. But I wouldn't want you to read it. So,
right.
So that's been tricky.
And I've, you know, that's changed a lot of how I read since becoming a mom. I mean, there were some books that I weeded out of my personal library because I specifically did not want a child to stumble upon them at any point.
Yeah, like the Outlander books.
Right. Which I initially enjoyed. There were aspects of the storytelling I really liked, but there's also some stuff that is absolutely not something that I think young women should be dealing with.
Right. Well, I've got the Game of Thrones series on Kindle in the library because it was like $1.99 for the whole set. I have never read it, actually. I picked it up, but it's like in there, and I'm like, I don't want them to read that.
I think there's ways you can hide things from the family library.
You can, except the way we started doing it was that they're not on separate libraries. They're in my library. So when they open a book, they're reading the book that I'm reading. You know, if we're reading at the same time, they're moving my bookmark. You know what I mean? Where they're in my account.
Okay.
So they see everything that's in my account, which at this point, it hasn't been an issue, but it could become one. So right now, they're all doing pretty good at you read what you ask before you open a book. You don't look at other stuff. So the thing is, the proximate issue that came up was there's a new Star Wars novel. They have these new set 150 years before the prequels, the High Republic, it's called, and there's a series. And so I'm reading the first book in this new series, and they're really like raring to get at it. And I'm reading it, and I'm thinking, is this appropriate? And it's like, okay, this is fine. Oh, and then there's a scene where these two minor characters show up, and it's two guys that are married. I'm like, it's only just kind of mentioned. They don't make a big deal out of it, but I'm like, it's part of the world. You know, maybe Bella, I've talked to actually Bella about
right
same-sex marriage. Anthony, maybe not. And then there's a later scene where there's this married couple who are, you know, pilots of a ship, and they're heading for vacation, and she's talking about, we're going to the beach where we'll wear tiny bathing suits, and, you know, we can make plans for all the things we'll do to each other. And it's like they're alluding to something. They don't outright say it, but I'm like, they're alluding to it. So I think it's maybe gives ideas. And I'm thinking, no. And it's frustrating because it's like, I can't just read the book and just, you know, go through it. I have to constantly be re-examining. What am I reading? What am I reading? What am I reading? It makes a much more tedious way of reading a book. I mean, some books I know, no, you're not going to read these, you know, the spy novel where the super international assassin kills five men 6 ways to Sunday. You know, I know that's not going to be something they're going to read. They're not going to read Clancy novels. But this, it's like, and I feel bad because they're really raring to get at more Star Wars novels. And there's so much of the, I hate to use the term, but it's the shorthand, the wokeness of the world. All that sort of stuff is seeping into these sorts of books in many ways. And I don't like that because it makes it, we're trying to protect the innocence of the kids. So I don't have a solution to offer, but
basically anything that has adult relationships is probably
potentially
off.
Problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's because they're at that age where, like, Anthony is pushing, he's 10, but he's really reading at a higher level. And part of the reason that this is important to me is because when I was their age, 10, 11, 12, 13, I read things that I shouldn't have read. I picked up books. I remember one time when I was a kid and we were on vacation, and there was a novel that was set in Boston, both in the colonial past or post-colonial, like the new America, and also set in modern day. And it was something to do with the mystery of this Paul Revere silver set. That's all I remember about it. It's not all I remember. It's all I remember about the plot. And everyone in the family was reading it. My dad, my sister, my brother. I'm like, oh, I want to read it too. So I picked it up, and it had like graphic scenes between men and women. That stuck with me. Like, I was at an impressionable age. It was not good that I read those at that time. And that affected me. That affected a lot of my, you know, how I saw the world and how I saw men and women. And I really don't want them to be exposed to that sort of thing. Yeah. So, and there were other books like that too. Weird, you know, because my mom was always, he's reading. Oh, I love that he reads. And so I would just read everything and she wouldn't worry too much about it. I kind of wish she did, but I'm not sure what she could have done because she was not a reader like I am. So I wouldn't expect her to be able to read the books before I could. It's a really tricky situation.
Well, this is why I rely a lot on book lists for book recommendations.
Yeah.
You know, there are lots and lots of good book lists out there, especially on my homeschooling, you know,
sure,
social media pages. Yeah. So in terms of that, like, in terms of other books, yeah, though, you have to kind of...
Well, but even then, we're, like, desperately trying to find books for Anthony to read. Because he powers through them so fast, and he's constantly looking for something new to read, and it's hard to keep up with him, even with the book lists and all that other stuff. Right. So, anyway, that's just something, if the listener, if you have any advice in this frame, if you have ideas, you know, I'd love to hear them, or what you do.
Well, the one thing I'm not doing is, I have had some friends who basically say that they don't restrict their kids reading.
They'll let them read anything, and...
They might restrict viewing, but they won't restrict reading because, you know, well, books. And, yeah, that's not my parenting approach.
I feel like just because it's not a visual medium, it doesn't mean it can't affect you deeply. I mean, I know that from personal history. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not of that philosophy that anything that's in written form, book form, is therefore safe.
I think that was kind of my mom's philosophy. That's why she let me get away with it. Anyway, so I just want to mention that. So let's talk about Laudate Sunday.
Joy!
Yay! Rejoice! Gaudete is Advent.
Yes.
And that's because the first word of the antiphon is...
Gaudete Advent and Laudate.
Yes, Gaudete. And in Lent it is Laudate.
Laudate.
Laudate. Fix my Latin pronunciation. And so Laudate means what? Rejoice?
They both basically mean rejoice.
Okay.
They're synonyms.
Okay. And the priests wear rose vestments. So the gospel for today was John 3:16, well, in the verses surrounding it, but John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son, that we may have life and live it abundantly. Oh, what? I just messed that up. I forget what it is now. I forget what the second half of it is. But in any case, the Father Willie Raymond was the celebrant from, he's the priest from the Father Peyton Center. But he had a couple of things he said that really stuck with us. The one that stuck with me was he quoted Pope Francis in the context of saying that we're at the halfway point of Lent. And the first half of Lent is we take a spiritual inventory and we see where we fall short.
Well, basically, he said we try lots of things and we fail at them.
Right. And then the second half of Lent is we are renewing our relationship with Jesus because we always fall short and we can't do it ourselves. And so we need him to do it. So he quotes Pope Francis, like the first thing that Francis said when he introduced himself to the world after his election 10 years ago this week.
8 years ago.
What?
Eight.
Eight years. Right. I'm sorry. Yes, the anniversary, 2013. 8 years ago this week, he said, I am a sinner, a beggar before the throne of grace. And I really like that. I like that way of phrasing it. I am a sinner, a beggar before the throne of grace. I am nothing. I have nothing. I am entirely dependent and reliant upon the grace that comes from God. And I think that's really good. So that one, that really stuck with me. How about you?
Right. Well, what struck with me actually is similar theme, but coming at it from a different angle, talking about, he also told a story about going to visit getting to meet Mother Teresa, visiting her at one of her foundations. And he talked a lot about Mother Teresa and the experience of meeting her. But one of the things that he mentioned was that she would send out her sisters every day to go find people on the street, take care of them. And she would always send the new sisters, the novices, out. And one of the things that the new sisters always found difficult was that at 3 p.m., they had to be back at the convent
for prayer,
for adoration. Mm-hmm. And the sisters would always, you know, there's so much more we could do. Why do we have to come back? Why do we have to stop? We want to just keep going. And there's more people. We could have helped more people. And Mother Teresa always said, you can't help any of them. You can't, unless you find Christ and meet him here in the Eucharist, you cannot find Christ under the disguise of the poor and miserable and dejected.
Right.
You can't see him unless you've already met him in the Eucharist. But then he also talked about how on the crucifixes in the convents, Mother Teresa always has a crucifix. And then
next to it,
the words, "I thirst," which reminded me of the when Isabella was about one. She wasn't even two, I don't think. Maybe she was barely two. We had this little Mother Teresa novena booklet that the Sisters of Charity had sent to us at some point. And one of the meditations, Bella had me read this to her every single day at nap time for months. I had this thing almost memorized. The entire, like, we would just read through the booklet, the novena pamphlet, and I would just read to her until she fell asleep. And she really liked it a lot. But there was this long meditation on "I thirst," which really stuck with me. And then I was thinking about that ironically last night, because I was reading The Friendship of Christ, the Robert Hubenson book that I'm reading. And the second part of the book is meditations on the seven last words. And the meditation I read last night was "I thirst." And he talked about sort of the similar thing to what Father was talking about. Like, we fall short, all of our efforts at self-denial and, you know, fasting and prayer and almsgiving, they all fall short. And eventually we hit a point in the spiritual life where we realize that we're just I'm a failure. I can't do this. I am failing at prayer. I am failing at fasting. I am failing at my spiritual life. And we just find that what he said is that this is at the point where Christ reaches out to us and says, "I am thirsting for you. Come give me something to drink."
Mm-hmm.
And it's that Christ presents himself to us in the guise of needing something from us, needing ourselves. And it's not the fasting, it's not the prayer, and it's nothing. It's just give me something to drink.
Yeah, give me yourself.
And I really liked that. I mean, it tied in so nicely with what Father was talking about. And then in the first part of his homily, and then he got to telling the story about the Sisters of Charity and "I thirst." And I was like, wow, okay. It's really hitting home for me.
Cool.
Especially because I think I said this last week, I don't feel like I've been very successful at anything this Lent. So I'm really feeling that sense of,
well, we've been doing Lent for a year, so it's kind of hard to make this even feel even more.
Yeah. Yeah. So
although we've been doing good stuff with Lent. We've been the new prayers, the night prayers with the kids. I mean, we've got stuff happening. It's not dramatic. It's not, you know, amazing. They did say that the Cardinal Sean was going to be doing a Lenten retreat again this year, but I haven't seen anything about it. Hopefully, maybe Holy Week. More of it'll be Holy Week.
Maybe.
Because I think it was Holy Week last year they did it.
Was it? I don't remember.
I think it was. Anyway, so there's still time. That's the lesson of Laudate Sunday, right? There's still time.
And that there is joy in the looking forward to Easter. We're in the second half. We're in the home stretch of Lent. And we can, even though we are failing to do all the things we set out for ourselves to do, we still know that he's going to come regardless,
mm-hmm.
and we can look forward with rejoicing to to Easter.
Right.
It doesn't depend on us.
Speaking of looking forward to Easter, I still got to sign us up for Mass.
Did you not do that today?
I didn't do it today. I even put it on my to-do list. I'll have to do it in the morning, or I'll do it right after we're done here, because it's an online form, so I'll do it as soon as we're done. So
yeah.
Let me. Let's get us out of here and then sign us up so we can get to Mass on Easter Sunday because it's 2021.
It would be really bad if it was full.
Yes. All right. Let's take a moment first, though, to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including AJ, Jenny N, Matt and Yolanda C, Sean F, and Christopher Y. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. And as I've been saying over the last few weeks, now's a great time to become a StarQuest patron because, thanks to a generous gift from a StarQuest supporter, When you start a new Patreon monthly pledge at sqpn.com/give, the first 3 months will be matched by an equal amount from our donor to support all our shows, including this one, which makes your gift go even further. And we're getting really close to meeting our goal of $2,000 in new monthly pledges. That's an important number for us because we have a number of things we need to get done with the network. We have to revamp our website and some other projects that really just are basic infrastructure projects that we're really working to get done. So if you could help us get there, we would really greatly appreciate it. So help us close the gap. If you've been thinking of becoming a patron, now's the time. Visit sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. If you have any comments on our discussion, you can let us know and give us some feedback like Eric did at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And of course, all the links will be in our show notes at sqpn.com. Follow Raising the Bets on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.